Hello, America, and all of our listeners around the world. You are listening to yet another episode of Let's Weekend, the show where we are just as unprofessional as we can possibly be.
Yeah, I'm proud of it, baby.
Yeah. Shamelessness, ho!
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is going to be our last show before American Thanksgiving rolls around.
Yep. It's also our one-year anniversary, by the way.
And it's our one-year anniversary. We started this show this time.
Well, actually, that's not right.
Well,
we started around E3 last year. This is the 52-episode mark, but we missed a lot of weeks getting there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did. So,
still, it counts.
It's kind of sort of our anniversary.
A year's worth of episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, hooray for occasional effort.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about some stuff this week, as usual. A certain film from our childhoods is celebrating 20 years old, is celebrating a 20-year anniversary. Why exactly anybody actually remembers this thing is a mystery. And of course, we got some NHL news. Going to be talking about a certain album released by a certain highly influential heavy metal band.
Yeah.
We'll be talking a little bit about Black Friday.
Yep.
So, all that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. And to start us off, as usual, Bill, what have you been up to this week?
So, I finished The Heir of Navarone, so went through that. I started up on the third book of the Rhaera Chronicles series, and that's The Death of Dulgoth. In this one, Royce and Hadrian are hired to advise a certain lord on what the best way to kill the Lady of the House would be, so that they could, you know, so that the lord could prevent it. Of course, you know where this is going to go. Bad things happen, as usual.
Oh yeah.
Just the level of ridiculousness is a little startling, though. So. Yeah, you think it's going to go one way, and then it goes way elsewhere. So, really enjoying that. I really like Michael J. Sullivan's writing, because, you know, he likes to write complete stories that stand on their own, so that's always nice. So apart from that, I've started learning Ruby on Rails. Boy, that's interesting. Yeah, I kind of have to rethink how I kind of do things, because it's kind of built on four parts. Here's the roots, models, controllers, and views. Roots basically is where are you going. Models are the data that you're working with. Controllers are how you interact with that data. And views is basically what gets displayed. So I'm not used to thinking in those kind of terms, so it's a little bit interesting for me to start off with. But yeah, I'm getting my head around it. Kind of fun. So apart from that, I watched the first episode of the Grand Tour. I will say that it's Top Gear. It's pretty much, yeah, it's Top Gear.
So they didn't screw with the format at all?
Well, a little bit. You know, they just kind of tweaked it a little bit, seeing as they're going to be on location every week. So
yeah.
there's no static set. The set kind of moves with them. They do have
a
track.
There's no... Okay.
But the track doesn't go with them, obviously.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they've got their own racing driver, who they call the American.
Let the speculation begin.
Oh, they gave his name right away.
It's,
some NASCAR guy whose name I can't remember. I'll just call him the American.
Okay.
So he's interesting and has some very interesting comments while he's testing cars. So that's fun.
Thereby eschewing the very point of the Stig.
Yeah. It's kind of the entirely opposite approach, but hey, it works. Their celebrity segment ran into some issues this week, so I don't know. We might see if they manage to sort those out next week. So it'll be interesting. But apart from that, the show's actually really, really good. It definitely feels like, you know, the continuation of what they started, but a lot edgier than what they could get away with on BBC.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm looking forward to this. Maybe checking it out here after the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, they actually get into an argument with the audience. Yeah. So,
as they do.
Yeah. It's a fun show. I'm looking forward to next week where, you know, they'll be in another place and doing even more crazy things. Other than that, it's definitely Clarkson, Hammond, and May, and they're back doing exactly what they were doing before. So this kind of leaves Top Gear in a really weird spot, because, yeah, like, who's going to watch that now that this is available, you know? So, anyway.
They've got some pieces to pick up after this last season, too.
Yeah. Yeah, one of their hosts actually left, so...
Well, it was the one everyone wanted to leave, too. So.
Yeah, so there's no big loss there. So. So we'll see if that show even gets another season. But so apart from that, I've also been listening to some music. I've been listening to Scorpion Child a lot. Great albums by that Texas band. If you haven't checked them out, Pat, you definitely need to.
There's a lot I need to check out.
Yeah,
they're great. Back Among the Living, I look forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, I've been listening to the Metallica album, like, many times. I think I listened to it twice today. So, but we'll talk more at length on that later on. So
It's what you do when there's new Metallica.
Yeah. So that's pretty much been my week. How about you, Pat?
I've been mainly just getting used to the new job. Obviously, it's been said on the show about how I quit Walmart and spend a little bit of time kind of between jobs. Got this nice office gig put together I talked about a couple weeks ago. Just getting settled into that, but it is just so much better on every conceivable level than what I was doing at Walmart.
Shoveling shit out of a fucking ditch would be better than what was going on at Walmart.
I probably would have done that just about as well, too.
Yeah.
But... the company I work for is fantastic. Just to give you a couple of examples, the CEO has invested in a small fleet of buses to shuttle his employees around town to and from work, which is a very nice alternative to the public transportation we have around here, which is one of the best systems in the country, don't get me wrong, but it's nice to have that option of not getting my ears talked off by some schmuck's shitty pullout game when I'm just trying to sit there and play Pokemon Go. So it's nice to have that as an option. And probably one of the best examples of the kind of people we work for is, there was apparently this story that goes around every time people are going through, through training and orientation and everything that said, where they talk about how there was this one situation there that, I don't know if he was in billing or, maybe pay res, I don't know, but just made this colossal mistake and ended up costing the company seven figures. And he thought the CEO was going to hit the ceiling when he found out about it, and he was just, you know, ready to start looking for another job. The only thing the CEO just does is says, I just spent $1 million training you. So that's the kind of company that I work for now, and it's just, it is such a good feeling. being in that situation. If I'd known what it was going to be like when I got there, I would have done it at least a year ago, maybe two. The thing with working at Walmart is that it really is similar to being in an abusive relationship, because you really start to believe that you can't do better elsewhere and that you're just screwed if it doesn't work out at Walmart.
Yeah.
And that mentality is real, and it got to me pretty bad. And I would have never, like, at my absolute worst point with Walmart, I would have never believed that there was even something, a situation like Conservice that I could get into. And not just get into, but succeed at. And I'm just so happy and thankful to be there that I can't say enough about it. So, I just, you know, I'm loving the new job, so I had to bring that up. As far as anything else goes, obviously I've been listening to the new Metallica a lot. They got that, all the videos out and everything, and, you know, they made sure everyone knew what the album was going to be even before it came out today.
Yeah.
And I've just been feasting on that, like, absolutely. But more on that later. And then I'll be checking out the Grand Tour myself after the show, like I said. So I'm looking forward to that. Should make for a good start to my weekend.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think you'll enjoy it.
How about you, Brandon?
Well, Chris, why don't you go first?
I decided to watch Hamilton's America, which is the documentary about Lin-Manuel Miranda and the Hamilton musical that is PBS produced and expires tonight. So I managed to get that in while it was still freely available to watch on their site, and it's pretty good. Sort of goes all the way back at the sort of infancy of the idea of when he read a biography for
Ron Chernow's biography. Yeah. Yep.
And sort of his whole process of working with Chernow and a number of others to actually produce the musical, sort of the early song stuff he wrote that he performed at the White House back in 2009, sort of all the way up to premiering on Broadway and all that. So it's really well done. As far as that thing becoming available on like Blu-ray or something like that, I think Lin-Manuel Miranda said he'd like to see that, but it's all up to PBS.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that'd probably be a good idea on their part.
Yeah.
As far as game stuff, I kind of bounced around a bunch this week, played a little bit of a bunch of different things. The biggest thing I played was Dishonored, the Definitive Edition.
Mm, not the second one?
No. Mm. I figured I'd start at the beginning.
Yeah.
Ah.
And, yeah, that still suffers from the same problem that I have with first-person stealth games, that you don't really have a great perspective of what's going on around you.
Yeah. So
the only time I really got any sort of great perspective is when the actual like objective at the moment was, hey, one of these like two or three guys in this area has a key you need, so they kind of highlighted them for me through walls or whatever I was looking at. So that was sort of one of the only times that they make it really easy to see sort of what's going on without like the awkward lean that they have in there.
Yeah.
It's kind of a little bit janky because it's, you can do it and then it, but it kind of sticks a little bit. It's not as like a much of a analog kind of move.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, you swing your guy this way and then you gotta swing him back the other way to get him out of there. And not really as nice as I would like, but other than that, it's pretty good. The playing that game now, that art style comes off as very cartoonish, especially because it's a lot of like flat textures, kind of almost like they're going for a very cartoony art style to it that I know Dishonored 2 does not have at all.
No, the two games look very, very different.
Yeah, it's like the new game has actual textures on everything, where in the original it's a lot more look like painted textures. Which was sort of an interesting thing to see. Yeah, I'm looking forward to putting some more time into that. I played like the first chunk of that, then kind of got the whole thing where, oh, you're in this big area. So instead of following the story character, I'm just going to go look around and find all the coins and other crap that's hidden around the place. Just ignore this person for a while, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, I dipped a little bit into Stern Pinball, which got released the other day. The disappointing thing about that is there's no, like, cross-buy if you bought any of those tables in Pinball Arcade.
Yeah.
So the few tables that are actually crossover, you still have to pay again for, which is a little bit of a disappointment.
Isn't this VR only though?
No, this is just regular Pinball Arcade, but only featuring Stern tables, which the one that is included in the base, it's free to play, but the first table that you get just unlocked freely is Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, which is a table that where basically anything you score is in the millions.
Yeah,
it doesn't bother going any lower than that. So at a certain point, the weird thing is I was playing it and it was set to like two-player mode for whatever reason. So it was just confusing me because I felt like I was just playing forever. And it's like, no, just I have like twice as many lives, essentially. I was getting hundreds of millions of points and then getting like extra balls and it's like, oh, this better end at some point. I ended up getting like the high score or top five score. I got 5 and 6 with both of the players. Almost got all of the standard goals first time. Like I missed one. I don't know what it was for. But yeah, they got a bunch of stuff. The AC/DC table. I haven't even looked at what all they had. But yeah, it's free. It's on at least PS4. I imagine it's going to be on Steam and Xbox One as well.
Yeah.
It hasn't been on there already. Star Trek Vengeance. AC/DC, Mustang, Harley Davidson, Last Action Hero, Starship Troopers, High Roller Casino, Ripley's Believe It or Not, Phantom of the Opera.
So that's all the tables they've got. New stuff that they moved out.
Yep.
Hopefully they'll get the Metallica one in there too at some point.
Yeah, it seems like $5 for most of the tables. There's a couple that are premium tables. I don't know what that means, but they're $10.
Yeah. There's no big like pack where you can like buy everything.
There's two $20 packs. The AC/DC table's $20. What?
There's that licensing.
Oh, maybe because of all the songs that are in it.
Yeah.
That shit don't cost a dollar.
Nope. Man, it says 12 songs. That's a lot of songs for a pinball table.
Yeah.
Let's see. It has like $20 for four tables, which... One of those is a $20 table, so I don't know. That maybe that's a decent price.
Yeah. Probably end up getting the...
Yeah. There's two packs, $20 packs. It's weird. We're to have all that stuff there and have a $20 table already.
Yeah.
That's just weird. What else did I play? I actually started up Parappa the Rapper 2. That was one of the games that was on sale in the 10th anniversary PSN sale.
Yeah.
And I remember playing that back in the day. It was one of games I got for $5 at Circuit City clearance. And it's weird going back to that kind of old school rhythm game. now that we're in this like post Rock Band Amplitude era thing.
Yeah.
This is like a thing where it's like, oh, the one character dictates the rhythm and then you just repeat it.
Yeah.
Or do your own like freestyle thing, whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
And the story for this is weird where Parappa wins a contest for, I think it was like 100 years worth of noodles. And then gets sick of it. Then has like noodle nightmares, at least in the first stage.
Mm.
He goes to a burger joint to get something new.
Yeah.
And then ends up getting noodle burgers. For whatever reason, that's what's offered.
Yeah.
Then the burger master teaches him how to make burgers. That's what the first song is about.
Joy. Yeah, I'm guessing it hasn't quite aged so well.
No, it... The noodle part, when you see like the noodles appearing, that looks really old, but otherwise everything else looks fine.
Hmm.
It just looks like an early PS2 game in terms of visual quality.
Yeah, mm. Well, which is what it is.
Yeah, it's like 2001.
Hmm.
Yeah, but for $5, it's looking forward to playing through the rest of it.
Yeah.
I
noticed Ark the Lad Twilight of the Spirits is on sale this week, so
yeah, that's a pretty good sort of JRPG strategy RPG hybrid game. Yeah, the battle system is pretty cool in that game where you're kind of doing the strategy RPG thing where you're moving your characters around trying to get advantages on the other guys and sort of double team them and all that.
Yeah.
And everything else is pretty much standard JRPG stuff, but yeah, I played that back in the day and also rebought it when it was on sale again, so
yeah.
Yeah, there's lots of good JRPGs through all that PS2 stuff so far.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's been pretty much it. How about you, Brandon?
Well, first and foremost, I'm just about wrapping up Trails of Cold Steel, at least the first one. the last part of that, the final chapter of that game is, well, long, for one.
That's kind of a habit with Kondo.
Yeah, I think it was freaking, you know, Danra messaged me on Facebook, and he's like, as is tradition, the final chapter is the longest fucking chapter ever.
An epic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like about as long as two or three regular chapters just in that one.
Yeah. And, you know, so, like, you know, the festival, one of the things I have noticed about this game, and this is really just anything having to do with school stories in Japan, is that it is very much filled with sort of Japanese school experience.
Hmm.
You know, just everything, the uniforms, the customs, you know, the way their calendars work. That whole thing when homeroom is over, you know, they do that whole thing, go all rise, bow, which I have been told is something that happens in Japanese public schools and high schools. Also, you know, there, of course, is the uniforms. A lot of people don't know this. The modern sort of public education system in Japan basically came about during the Meiji era. And it's basically designed to resemble, to basically be designed around the Japanese military.
Yeah.
Yeah. The hierarchy, pretty much the way everything works. You know, the way the student council works. Which, here in the U.S., we don't have anything close to something like that. And then, of course, it's the fact they have the school festival, which is not something that schools in America really do.
Nope.
But,
I don't think a lot of the students over here could be fucked to do it, as having been one myself.
Yeah. Whereas in Japan, the schools, especially the high schools, they go all out when the festival, when, you know, Golden Week rolls around.
Mm.
So, Yeah, they take that shit seriously. And, you know, the thing is in this, once the festival rolls around, you go out, and then all of Class 7 holds a concert, and then there's a bonfire with the dancing, and that's the point where you get to choose who your dance partner will be. By the way, so, Pat, you've played, haven't you?
I'm not quite that far along yet, but I have some idea of what goes on.
Yeah, okay. But anyway, so that happens. I'm
savoring these games.
Yeah. But I'm pretty sure that I'm probably going to be wrapping up the game, if not tonight, then tomorrow night.
Hmm. I hope you have your money earmarked, because, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's no problem. I've already... What do you mean earmarked?
Like, ready to go.
Already set aside for Cold Steel 2.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've already got a copy reserved over at GameStop, so...
Okay. Yeah.
Just... And I got the cash for it, too. And store credit, so...
Now that I've got my job lined up, I've got to go ahead and buy that now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, so there's that. I got to tell you, if there's one thing about the Trails games that Falcom... excuse me. If there's one thing the Falcom does well, it's character development.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's really easy to get attached to these characters by... Yeah. And just the world itself is just kind of something you want to get lost in.
Yeah.
It really is. And I am absolutely certain that... Okay, so we know that Falcom is working on Trails 3 and on Cold Steel 3 right now.
Yeah.
They announced they started working on it last year. And... After the Erebonia arc is over, I don't know about you, but I'm getting the sense that there's going to be this huge sort of Zamoria-wide story arc. Like, they straight up just go into basically their equivalent of a world war. Because the type of tensions that are building, not just in Trails in the Sky, but also Trails of Cold Steel, and also the stuff that's in Zero and Azure... Which,
yeah. If you're a history buff, you know where this is all leading.
Yeah. Because, you know, it's like they're all, Crossbell has declared their independence as an independent state, which means they've also frozen all of the foreign assets that are in the National Bank.
Yeah.
And Crossbell, and also, at this point, freaking Erebonia is running headlong into civil war.
Yeah.
At any moment now.
Yeah.
The Republic of Calvert is having problems with anti-immigrant terrorism. Those of you who don't know, the Republic of Calvert is the, you know, of the four main... countries that are in the Trails series. There's, the Kingdom of Liberal, which is where Trails in the Sky takes place, which is a constitutional monarchy. Then you have Erebonia, which is basically an autocracy, very reminiscent of like late 19th century Prussia.
Mm-hmm.
Where you've got a nobility faction desperately clinging to keeping the old social system intact. And then on the other side, you've got guys like Chancellor Osborne and the reformists who are trying to bring a change to the system.
Yeah.
And neither side is willing to budge.
Nope.
And then in Crossbell, of course, you got Crossbell, and Crossbell basically just recently gained its independence, well, declared its independence. And Crossbell is basically a city-state,
yeah.
For lack of a better word. And then you had the Republic of Calvert, and the Republic of Calvert is actually a democratic republic.
Hmm.
And one of the things that is sort of their hallmarks is that they're very open to immigration. And so there's a lot of immigrants from the East who have immigrated into Calvard. And we've met a couple of Calvard Calvardians in the Trail series at this point. You know, for example, we've met Big Dude from Trails in the Sky. What was his name?
I think it began with a V. Bane?
Screw it. I'm going to... Hold on. Let's see. Yeah, here we go. I actually think it began with a Zane. That's what Zane Vathek. Yes, he's from Calvard. And then, of course, there was Killica, who is also from Calvard. And so there's a very strong sort of the way their culture is, they seem a lot like a sort of cross between the U.S. and Japan. And
really well executed, too.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is, like they said, they have immigration, and because they, you know, as a national sort of, they're very supportive of immigration, but there are various factions within Calvard who are concerned with stuff like, you know, obviously there's the bullshit stuff about nationalism and sound familiar.
Yeah. Gee.
When we finally get a Calvard arc, a proper Calvard arc, it's going to be very timely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just like, and the thing is, Erebonia and the Republic do not get along at all. Mm-hmm. And
you get a sense of this way back in Trails in the Sky SC.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because you basically have to visit their respective embassies in the capital. And, basically just,
about as well as you would expect.
Yeah, the ambassador at the Erebonian embassy is a complete dick. And he says all that shit when Zane is in the room. So, but anyway, so yeah, I'm doing that. Reading, as usual. I went to the used bookstore recently, and I found a very good condition first edition copy of Ursula K. Le Guin's The Dispossessed, which is something I've been looking for a long time, and I managed to get it. So hooray for me. And I got some other stuff, too. So that's as usual. I have been getting stuff ready for Thanksgiving. As everybody knows, Thanksgiving is next week. And, so I've been doing stuff like I've been going over to my grandmother's and, helping her shop for stuff over at Sam's Club, getting stuff ready. 'Cause we usually do Thanksgiving out of town, you see, and, I described a lot of this, I think, last year.
Yep.
When we did our sort of pre-Thanksgiving episode. And basically, we do all of this in Chauncey, which is an itty-bitty little town in North Georgia.
Yeah.
And one of those towns where there's more churches than convenience stores. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
I say that. I'm pretty sure there's places like that in Canada, too. But... but yeah, itty bitty little place, really just out in the middle of freaking nowhere. it's where my great great grandparents used to live. It was their house.
Okay.
And, it's just something we've been doing since before I was even born. So, family traditions and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But, that's what I'm going to be, that's what I've been working on, and everybody know, and well, that's pretty much it. Has anybody got anything they want to add?
No, I'm good.
Alrighty then. Well, in that case, I think it's time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's random factoid. Now, like I just mentioned a second ago, Thanksgiving is coming up. And Thanksgiving, I'm going to ask you this, Bill, real quick. Have you ever sort of heard the sort of general story of how Thanksgiving sort of came to be in the U.S.?
Yeah.
Like, it's basically, you know, pilgrims show up on Plymouth Rock with no farming implements.
Yeah.
Because I guess God will provide, I guess.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, basically the natives keep them from starving.
Yeah, Squanto, who, yes, was an actual person, showed up with some of his fellows. They helped them to do stuff, showed them how, you know, to use old fish as fertilizer. And then, so that happened. Just so you know, the part about them all having a big feast and having a happy day, yeah, that's bullshit. Did not happen.
Yeah.
Not to say that the Puritans weren't grateful, but, see, here's the thing. Squanto, the reason he was able to communicate with the English in the first place was because he had been a slave on an English ship years before.
Yeah.
And so he escaped, went back to his tribe, and so when these Puritans showed up, he actually knew how to speak the language.
Yeah.
All right. So basically that's sort of the story that we're told. But you see, what a lot of people don't know is that a sort of uniform day for Thanksgiving is actually a really recent thing. And by recent, I mean like just around before the time of the Civil War, recent. Before then, just every individual town, the mayor would come in and just sort of declare a day of Thanksgiving, and then all of the sort of, you know, and usually it was sometime around in the fall, and all the sort of stuff that you would expect to eat on an American Thanksgiving had sort of become canonized at that point. Primarily, it was America,
even back then.
Now, the thing was, Thanksgiving, the holiday as we know it, primarily came into existence in New England and spread out. But here's the thing a lot of people don't know. So, first and foremost, the modern sort of day of Thanksgiving, as we nationally think about it, more or less came around in the 1840s. And you can primarily thank a woman by the name of Sarah Josepha Hale, who was a New Hampshire woman who was a writer and editor. She wrote a novel called Northwood, or Life North and South, for her first novel, which was sort of meant to contrast life in New England and the South, and it was a massive hit. And because of her reputation, she was given over to become the editor of Godey's Ladies' Book, which at that time in America was the most widely distributed magazine in the country. And so, one of the things that she did while she was in charge of this magazine was to try and begin a campaign to make Thanksgiving a nationwide event. So she would send out various letters to various towns all over the country, usually it didn't happen with much problem. The people would receive the, you know, various potentates and mayors and whatever would receive them. They'd declare Thanksgiving. Happy times are had by all. And she'd basically do this from 1846 onward. And eventually, folks in the South started to do it too. And then right around the early 1850s,
shit came to bear.
Yeah. So, here's the thing. The National Day of Thanksgiving was primarily championed by the Presbyterian Church up north, which was the primary, primary Christian body in the north. But there was a little thing, sort of a problem that was becoming, well, a certain thing that was, shall we, an institution that was peculiar to the South. Take a wild guess what it was. Slavery.
Yep.
And as everybody knows, by this point in American history, the seams were coming apart. And it was around this time Hale started, once again, around 1853, she started up her regular letter-writing campaign. And part of the reason she was wanted to do this, and specifically the reason she wanted to make Thanksgiving a national holiday, because she wanted to foster national unity. Because, again, the country was coming apart at the seams. It looked like there was no way any of this could lead to anything else but conflict. Guess who didn't take kindly to that?
Guess when the Southerners South had some problems with that.
They actually started to call Thanksgiving the, and I'm quoting here, Yankee abolitionist holiday.
Because of course they did.
Yeah.
Virginia, the state of Virginia in particular, was a hotbed of anti-Thanksgiving sentiment. In fact, in 1853, the governor actually declined to declare a day of Thanksgiving for his state, citing, and I am not making this up, Thomas Jefferson's firm doctrine of separating church and state.
Oh my God.
Well, this was the 1800s.
Now, the governor that came after that one, a gentleman by the name of Henry A. Wise, and when he became governor, he received the same letter from Hale and not only declined the proclamation, but actually fired back a refusal. And this is what he declared. This theatrical national claptrap of Thanksgiving has aided other causes in setting thousands of pulpits to preaching, quote, Christian politics instead of humbly letting the carnal kingdom alone and preaching singly Christ crucified. By other causes, of course, he meant abolitionism.
Yeah.
Later that same year, the Richmond Whig, which was one of the major newspapers in the state of Virginia, made the case against Thanksgiving, saying they basically decried what they thought was the quote-unquote carnality of the holiday, which the editors felt should instead be spent in worship. In the District of Columbia, they noted that an astonishing quantity of execrable liquor will be guzzled, and the holiday would be little more than an occasion for indulgence and dissipation at the cost of character.
Fuck yeah.
While we are content, the editors continued, to buy our cotton spools and wooden ware from New England, because hers are the cheapest, we are by no means content to receive her notions of religion, morals, the duties of citizenship, etc., as being the best. And it didn't stop there. In Mississippi, a homeopathic physician, you know, a quack, recorded in his diary, "This was Thanksgiving Day. I am sorry that the Yankee custom has crept in among us. I object to it because it makes gratitude to God a matter of civil ordinance and limits to a single day the exhibition of feelings, which should be a portion of our daily life." Now, for the record, other commenters in the South also noted that South already had a holiday of feasting and celebration late in the calendar year. Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, New England, which inherited a legacy of Puritan dogma that considered Christmas a secular abomination, Christmas was not observed as a celebratory occasion until the 1870s. To the Southern eyes, a day of feasting in late November was redundant and meant the loss of a day's income for its workers and merchants. So, eventually, man, of course, the war came to an end, and eventually the South did more or less accept Thanksgiving. And oddly enough, the stuff that's eaten in Thanksgiving is basically a mirror of the stuff that they traditionally ate up in New England.
Yeah, turkey and all that good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
The beer and football came later.
Yeah. And finally, the national Thanksgiving holiday was finally declared in 1864, thanks to none other than President Abraham Lincoln. In 1939, the holiday was permanently moved to the fourth Thursday in November by President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And that is basically how the South kind of wrestled with the notion of Thanksgiving for
many years.
Well, at least they didn't have Fox News back then.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Oh, yeah. And also funny how they use an argument for separation of church and state.
Yeah, I think they throw that one out all the time.
Yeah. Don't you just hear all them Southern politicians recently just clamoring about the separation of church and state?
Yeah.
For the record, there's a lot of people in the South who don't believe such a thing exists. You know, salt of the earth, people of the land, you know, morons.
Yeah.
And that has been yet another episode of Brandon's Random Factoid. This episode of Brandon's Random Factoid has been sponsored by Space Jam. Space Jam, the only motion picture in the world that says the word slave more than all of Roots. It's true. Yeah,
we'll probably talk about that later.
Yeah. Okay, so now that that's out of the way, let's move on to our asshole of the week. Yeah. So who was it that put up the asshole of the week?
Me.
All right, now I know who this guy is, but you tell the story.
Okay, so Carl Higbee is a Trump supporter. He's been going around basically a surrogate.
Mm-hmm.
As Trump surrogates have tended to do throughout the campaign and since,
mm-hmm.
Kind of tip the hand as to some of the true sentiments and implications behind this entire shit show of a campaign or a movement or whatever you want to call it now.
Mm-hmm.
So the talk of a so-called Muslim registry has been frequent pretty much since Trump announced for his candidacy.
Yep.
What Carl Higbee did was actually went on Fox News and tried to use Japanese internment camps as an example of precedent.
Yeah.
Or justification.
Precedent and justification, yes.
Yeah,
aren't like the Japanese internment camps like pretty much agreed upon to be one of the worst things America ever did?
I thought.
Well, yeah, but see, here's something.
By people who aren't knuckle dragging,
or Michelle Malkin, who actually wrote a whole book justifying
numbskulls.
Yeah, Michelle Malkin, who actually wrote an entire book justifying the internments and recommending it for the terrorism problem.
That doesn't really solve anything.
No.
So, yeah, this guy's basically using the Japanese internment camps.
Yeah, that's asshole of the week.
Yeah, and just so you remember, there's a lot of folks who, a lot of Japanese Americans who lived through that who are still alive today and can tell you all about what it was like to live in those.
Yeah,
like George Takei.
Yes, like George Takei.
Like he wrote up an op-ed about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. He spent his early childhood in a fucking internment camp in California. But see, here's the thing. The scary part about it is basically most legal people in the United States, people in general just agree it was a shitty thing to do. And nothing can really justify it.
Nope.
Here's the thing, though. After the internment camps were closed and all of them were released, basically after World War II ended, one of their the internees filed a lawsuit against the American government. And it went all the way to Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court actually ruled in favor of the government, basically saying that the intern camps were not unconstitutional. Now, it is mostly agreed upon, basically, it's unofficially, but basically agreed upon that it would not be, it would not stand up to constitutional scrutiny today.
No.
But it's never been officially declared as unconstitutional. So that's the scary part, because yes, a very determined individual in the highest ranks of government could still exploit that loophole if they wanted to.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think they'd be able to get away with it, because
the pitchforks come out.
Well, they'd have to bring it to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court would very soundly strike it down.
Even if they are down on justice, it's still with them.
What version of the Supreme Court?
Wow. Yeah, that's the case, isn't it? So yeah, Carl Higbee is an asshole, and it really took a person like Carl Higbee to make Megyn Kelly seem reasonable. those of you who don't know, we've got it linked here in the show notes. Basically, he did this little Megyn Kelly on Fox News did an interview with him, and she basically let him have it.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot to make me be on Megyn Kelly's side. That did it.
Yep.
So that was our asshole of the week. Okay, what about our hero of the week? Just to wash the taste out of our mouths.
No, that's kind of why we do the hero of the week every week.
Yeah.
Is to wash off the asshole of the week, stench, vibe, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, so who put it's Elon Musk, but why? That's the question.
Yeah, we actually had options here, but the one that I put was he's basically planning to launch a vast array of satellites. He's filed for FCC permission to do this, to basically provide broadband around the globe.
And to make it much more affordable, too, apparently, which is awesome.
Yep.
Because there's a lot of places in the country, in the world, that still don't have internet access.
Yeah.
And if they do, it's still dial-up.
And highly government-controlled.
Yeah. And the thing is, you just really cannot survive with dial-up internet these days.
No.
You just can't. Internet doesn't work, doesn't function on the, it used, back when the internet was older, back in the 90s, when dial-up was the standard, the internet was designed and operated or under the assumption that people use dial-up.
Yeah.
Internet now operates under the assumption that everyone uses some kind of Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Well, you got websites that have images that are like a meg or two per image, and there's like several of them on the page. Mm-hmm.
That'll bring a 56K modem to its knees.
Yeah, because, one image would take like a minute to download. So
we get the various news sites that have auto-playing video.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, those are pretty awesome. I also love the some of the websites that have a silent audio track playing in the background. Those are great. Yeah. Use your bandwidth for no reason whatsoever. Well, actually, I know why they do it, but.
Yeah. And so the number of satellites he's going to be putting out is going to be 4,425.
Enough to more than quadruple what is already circling the planet.
Yes, that is more than three times of the satellites that are already up in orbit.
Yeah. Well, he does now, own a space company, so, in theory, that shouldn't be all that expensive for him to do.
Yeah. There is one thing I'm concerned about, though.
Hmm.
Have any of you guys ever heard of something called Kepler syndrome?
Nope.
It's basically what happens when there's so much space junk flying or orbiting around the Earth that at some point it starts crashing into each other.
Hmm.
And remember, these things are rotating around the Earth at hundreds of miles an hour. So they keep going into each other enough, they'll start breaking off into itty bitty little pieces.
Oh, that's true. That's, the Seven Eves, the last Neal Stephenson novel, had that as a plot point. So,
mm-hmm. Which is basically going to mean that, and eventually some of that stuff will probably fall into the atmosphere, or pretty much all of it will probably burn up in orbit. But it'll make it that much more difficult to actually leave Earth safely.
Yeah.
And that's where you get anime-like planets.
Yeah, where they basically they operate as professional junk collectors.
Yep.
Yeah, this is really awesome.
Yeah.
Elon Musk. Sometimes I want to hate him, but...
Yeah, he may be crazy, but he's crazy like a fox.
He's determined to make the world better.
Yeah.
Even if he is himself kind of an asshole.
Yeah.
He admires Ayn Rand, for God's sakes.
Obviously not too much, because the other thing that I could have put for his Hero of the Week entry this week was he was advocating that that it is inevitable that machines will replace humans in the job market. But
so he was advocating for a basic income?
Basic income.
Yeah.
Yeah, the UBI. He's not the only one pushing for something like that.
So
yeah, that's becoming a big thing over in Europe now. I think there was was it Switzerland or Sweden that's beginning to experiment with that?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's
Switzerland.
Yeah, if you want to keep a free, relatively a market economy going, you're going to need some level of UBI in the near future.
Yeah.
You cannot have capitalism if the population does not have capital.
Yeah.
But yeah, so either Musk does not admire Rand as much as it's hyped up to be, or he missed the point.
Yeah.
Or he took it as a cautionary tale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. There's also that. Hmm. All right. So, moving on to the show proper. Today brought us the first new album from Metallica in a decade, I think, wasn't it?
8 years.
8 years.
Hardwired to Self-Destruct. It's good.
Yeah. First, let's
really good.
Let's get the elephant in the room here. No, it's not distorted and clipped to hell. Okay, let's just get that out of the way. They've learned their lesson from Death Magnetic. You can actually listen to this album,
and also from Saint Anger.
Yeah. So,
and that the drums don't sound like somebody's banging on a garbage can.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like the only bad thing is the cover.
Yeah, the cover's kind of weird, but it's one
of the effects that they use in one of the videos.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of gives me a Saint Anger vibe looking at that thing. Like, it's like something would have come up with 10 years ago when they were working on that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. These 50-year-olds being angry. 50-year-old millionaires.
Right. Well, somebody's got to be. But, yeah, so that's technically it's actually properly produced. I don't know if it's still Rick Rubin who's at the helm, but
I don't think so.
Let's hope not, because yeah, that didn't go well.
Mm. Anyway, I guess
Death Magnetic was bad.
No, the songs were bad.
The production was quite wanting, but the songs themselves were fantastic.
Yeah, that wasn't really Rick Rubin. That production was. So.
Yeah.
So,
but it could have been worse. It could have been Megadeth's Risk.
Yeah.
Hey, I liked Risk.
Risk was an album that exists. It has a few good songs on it, but not. It's not one of their best.
The operative term here being few.
Yeah.
As in the one that doesn't have the annoying electric violin in the background. But, so basically they really did kind of go back to their roots on this one.
All of their roots.
And it shows.
there's stuff in there that calls back to load and reload. There's stuff in there that calls back to Master of Puppets. You got stuff in there that's, you know, from their garage days. Hell, I even like I listened to Load after I listened to Hardwired, and it's like, huh. I think at this point we can kind of acknowledge that Load and Reload were actually decent albums, but
yeah, I'm happy that
Load and Reload were good modern rock albums.
Yeah,
they just they weren't really what you would expect from Metallica.
Yeah,
I think was really kind of the problem. Pretending
that they didn't happen.
Okay, yeah,
because Load and Reload, music wise, they sound more alternative than you would expect from Metallica.
Yeah,
but it worked so well.
Oh, it did, no question. That Until It Sleeps and
King Nothing.
My personal favorite being Memory Remains, just because I love that video.
I like the songs off the back parts of the albums. You got stuff like Fixer, Ronnie.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in here that really does sort of show their sort of new wave of British heavy metal inspiration.
Yeah.
We talked a bit about Atlas before, and that song is very Iron Maiden-y.
Yeah.
Kind of Diamondback-y, Diamondhead, I mean.
Yeah.
It's really, you know, and if you've ever read anything or, you know, had them in interviews, they all tell you that's sort of, those were the bands that they kind of all bonded over.
Yeah.
And especially if you listen to, like, really early Metallica, you can definitely hear it.
Yeah.
Like, there's some stuff on, you know, Kill 'Em All that definitely sounds very, you know, new wave of British heavy metal-ish, but... Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, that's all kind of going through this. We're seeing really a sort of, really just a callback to all of their past music.
Yeah.
Except Saint Anger.
Yeah, except Saint Anger. I think they want to get away from that one as much as possible. Yeah. They got a lot of, like, really infectious riffs in this album.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like, Am I Savage has kind of, like, bored itself into my skull and will not leave.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
They had a little bit of a Megadeth moment on that one.
Yeah. Yeah. And then on the Spit Out the Bone, it's like, I don't know what the hell happened there, but...
It's the obligatory Guitar Hero track.
Yeah.
you can pen it in as DLC right now, I promise.
Yeah. Should we also talk about the fact that they basically... giving away the entire album in video form?
Yeah, pretty much.
Every song on the album gets video, including the bonus track. No, not just like, not the live videos from Saint Anger where they were just jamming in HQ, but proper produced music videos like you would see two or three times on any other album.
Yeah.
Over the course of its marketing lifespan. We got the whole album at once.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think they finished uploading like late last night in this the summer went.
Yep.
And how about the finalized version of that song?
Yeah.
It was, like, I didn't really think much of it when it was just going around as kind of a live demo shortly after Death Magnetic.
Yeah. Well, but they did release it as a single, so they've had it in the pocket for a while.
Yeah, but that single was the unfinished version. This is different. This is proper.
Yeah.
And I like what it turned into.
Yeah. Of course, you only get that on the deluxe version of the album, though. So
yeah.
Should be pointed out.
Selling point.
Yeah. Yeah, that third CD is actually very, very good.
Yeah.
There's that. So, there's...
Go ahead. I was going to say, so like... you know, obviously the video for the first one got here is obviously a big tribute to the late Lemmy Kilmister.
Yeah.
Yep. Murder One.
Which makes sense because Lemmy, you know, Motorhead was one of the biggest inspirations they had.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all makes and it's so easy to forget that before he started Motorhead, he was in one of those tippy dippy space rock bands.
Hawkwind.
Hawkwind, yeah. And for the record, the stuff he did with Hawkwind was pretty good.
Yeah.
But it makes you forget that the guy who, you know, became famous for all the leather and studs and, you know, basically every biker soundtrack ever made. before that was basically jamming away on a bunch of hippie tunes.
Yeah.
So. And that was back in 1975, too. When that first album came out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they've been around for a long freaking time.
Yeah.
Him and Judas Priest. And so then we had another song, Confusion, which is sort of goes back to One and Turn the Page type of...
Just kind of disturbing.
Yeah.
Really unflinchingly honest accounts of things.
Yeah. And...
Covering combat PTSD.
Yeah. And just to go along with it, the opening is basically almost a complete copy of Am I Evil from Diamond Head.
Yeah.
So once again, showing their inspirations on their sleeves.
Yeah.
And then we've got the Lotus thing since Reload.
Dream No More.
Yeah. That's probably one of my favorite tracks on the album, to be honest.
Yeah, it's the one that I kept listening to at work today. Yeah. Just I kept going back to that one because that's you know, a lot of people think of the Loads as sort of a decline for Metallica, but I've missed that version of them pretty much since they moved on from it. Yeah. I'm not saying that I want all of their material from now on to be in that vein. But it's nice to see a couple tracks, you know, here and there that that provide that kind of sound. And this is probably the best of the bunch, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. And apparently, and I guess there was something Guilty Gear related in here.
Well, it was just something that I noticed, that I picked up on. The main riff is... not identical to, but remarkably similar to Kage Matsuri from Guilty Gear XX.
Ah.
Yeah.
I thought it sounded familiar.
Yeah, go back and listen to Kage Matsuri, and then listen to Dream No More. They don't keep it up for the whole song, but I like to think that one of them is a Guilty Gear player and snuck that in. It's just... It puts a smile on my face.
Yeah.
As both a Metallica fan and a Guilty Gear player.
Yeah.
Well, Guilty Gear does have plenty of Metallica references in it.
Yeah.
One thing I can safely say about this album is there is no filler whatsoever on this album.
Nope.
I would have said the same about Death Magnetic, too, but...
Yeah. But this one in particular, it's like there's not a song that doesn't seem like it belongs there.
Yeah.
I'm still a bit confused as to why it was split onto two discs. It didn't really need to be, but whatever.
So they could get that much more money out of you.
Well, that's the thing. It wasn't any more money.
Mm.
Yeah. It's like that 3-CD deluxe edition cost $15, you know, and you could get it at Best Buy for $10. You could also get the regular edition for $10. I'm not entirely sure how Best Buy does their pricing, but I think somebody screwed up there. So, yeah. I also want to point out that third disc is definitely worth it. Lords of Summer, we talked about, but there's also the Ronnie Rising medley. Whenever you can hear Metallica doing Dio, yes. Yes, please. More of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they did a really spectacularly great cover of Jeff Healey's When a Blind Man Cries. So, yeah.
None of those were new, though. That was what surprised me. It was just re-releases of some covers that they've done in the last few years.
Yeah, but it really wasn't, you know, they were kind of difficult to get.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't know about them, too.
Yeah. So. And the rest of the stuff on that album, on that disc, is basically live performances. So it's all good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm impressed with this album.
Very much. Yeah, to say the least. Just, yeah. Oh. It's a lot to digest.
Yeah. The album itself is only 12 songs, but boy, they stacked.
Mm. They milked it.
Yeah.
I understand now why it took 8 years to get this album done.
Yeah.
Well, to put aside all of the touring.
Yeah. Did anybody also notice that the title of the album is very Megadeth?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Metallica typically doesn't do ellipses, but Megadeth did it all the time.
Yeah. In fact, I was surprised that they didn't have "To Self-Destruct" on the back of the CD instead of just on the cover.
Yeah.
Which, again, is a very Megadeth thing to do.
Yeah. All the way back to their very first album.
Yeah. So far, so good. So what?
No. That's a
Killing is my big business and business is good.
Oh, wait a minute.
Yep.
That was their first album.
Hmm.
So Far, So Good, So What came out after Peace Sells.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Sometimes I get those mixed up. Well, with the amount of albums that Megadeth has. Yeah.
They're prolific.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. So then, moving on from there, we've got some NHL news.
The impending Las Vegas franchise has finally settled on a name, logo, basically an entire branding identity, and they are going to share it with the world on Tuesday.
Yeah.
The newest member of the Pacific Division.
Any speculation?
It's going to have something to do with Knights. That's, I think the team owner is West Point alumni.
Yeah.
And wants that to have something to do with the team name. They announced a long time ago also that the team's color scheme would be black, gold, and white, or black, gold, and silver, something like that. So, yeah, it's unless he's changed his mind about that, then that's probably what it's going to be.
Yeah.
I'm just hoping they don't end up sounding like some beer league team or whatever.
Yeah, well, we'll wait and see. It's we got to announce this Tuesday, like you said. So
yeah.
Probably be we'll get the confirmation next week.
I'm just hoping that Utah gets brought into Las Vegas's marketing territory, as the NHL sees it, so that we no longer get region locked from Colorado Avalanche games on NHL.tv.
Yeah.
That'll be nice if they if it plays out that way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, then. Tuesday.
Keep your eye out.
31st NHL team.
Mm. Awesome. So, we recently this week got the trailer for the live action adaptation of Ghost in the Shell.
Yep. And it looks actually kind of decent. I'm not saying it's going to be bad because we don't really see all that much, but
yeah,
it does look pretty. Does look like something that I would actually want to sit down and watch. So I'll put it that way.
Yeah, the thing is, though, watching this, I could never get my suspension of disbelief high enough because you have obviously Caucasian actors playing as obviously Asian characters.
Yeah, there is that.
I mean, the entire original Ghost in the Shell takes place in Japan.
Yeah.
All of the characters are Japanese.
Yeah.
You know, for God's sakes, the heroine is named Motoko Kusanagi.
Yeah.
And she's being played by Scarlett freaking Johansson.
Hey.
And she's basically naked for a large part of the trailer.
Yeah.
Kind of like in the movie.
That's true. Yeah, it's true to the source material.
Yeah.
What about that remix of Enjoy the Silence? Yeah.
Mm.
No thanks.
Oh.
I hate when they do that.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I can't.
Nope.
I mean, really, it's not just the fact that it pushes all the wrong buttons for me. I mean, first of all, you got very just painfully obvious Hollywood whitewashing, which, yeah. You know, and I'm not saying the effects don't look good. They do. But it's just that thing in particular just will not let me look past it.
Yeah.
Well, like, you know, that trailer may be the greatest thing in the world, but it still will not beat the fact that it is an Asian character being played by Scarlett freaking Johansson.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Look.
You know, the thing is, at least they're not trying to Asian her up. You know,
Scarlett Johansson.
That would be even worse.
They tried.
Tried. But then you're just sort of going back to, you know, Mickey Rooney. Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's hope they don't figure that tech out to change races of their actors.
Oh, that would be bad. You wouldn't know who anybody was anymore.
Well, in other movie news, probably much more promising, there is a Disney is going to be creating a live action Winnie the Pooh movie, and it's going to be called Christopher Robin.
Yeah, produced by one of the people that did The Jungle Book.
Yeah, so we know it's in good hands.
Yeah. So the story that's proposed here is very much like the like Hook. As Christopher Robin is the focus, and he is...
an adult now, I guess.
Yeah, with a wife and daughter.
Mm-hmm.
He's a businessman, and Pooh shows up needing help to find the rest of his friends.
Hmm.
So now he has to figure out...
because Pooh hasn't aged at all.
Well, he's a stuffed animal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He can't age. He can get moldy, but...
Yeah, so
frayed around the edges? Nope, not whatsoever.
Yeah, so he has to figure out how to help Pooh while also keeping his marriage and family life together.
Oh, well, that's a weird line to be walking.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But it's...
Yeah, hey, directed by... who is it? It's Mark Foster. Who did Monstrous Ball?
Oh.
Kite Runner.
Hmm.
Quantum of Solace and World War Z.
Oh.
So, apart from World War Z.
Well, I have a feeling maybe that was more the studio.
Yeah, maybe.
Than actually him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, hey, we got this zombie movie. Let's buy licensed people now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So... I don't know. This could be interesting.
They've been doing pretty good on their live action stuff.
Yeah.
Well, they did a really good job with The Jungle Book, so yeah,
mm-hmm.
It's definitely going to be worth keeping an eye out.
Much better than that movie had any right to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah. The premise, I will admit, the premise does sound interesting.
Yep.
Now let's see if they can pull it off.
Yep.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like you have to worry about Rufio or anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've seen Hook.
Yeah.
And,
I like Hook, not for the reasons they probably want me to.
Right.
That's for having, like, Dustin Hoffman and all these other people hamming it up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Plus, Robin Williams, the king of hamming it up.
Yeah. So
he's the most understated character.
Yeah.
He's playing it straight for the most of the movie.
Mm-hmm. So, moving on from there, we just wanted to take a moment to talk about some... Well, this might be another reoccurring segment now, which is gaming original soundtracks worth remembering.
I am completely okay with that being a thing.
And yeah. This time, we're talking about a certain DOS game known as Zone 66.
Yeah. This was an early Epic Mega Games release done by Renaissance Games. The composer of the soundtrack was a guy by the name of Kenny Chu. He's gone on to do other things like Unreal and all that stuff, but this particular one is kind of interesting because he didn't do one soundtrack, he did three.
Yeah.
Okay, granted, the ad-lib and the sound
that must have taken considerable
considerable effort, because the ad-lib and the Sound Blaster soundtrack are fairly similar. Except, there's certain parts that one doesn't have because of the technical limitations, so he kind of rejiggered it to work around that. And they both sound really good. And then he went and did the Gravis Ultrasound version of the soundtrack, which is completely different.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the game releases with an original and an arranged soundtrack on launch, basically. Mm-hmm. So, good stuff. The title sequence of that Sound Blaster soundtrack, if you're not thinking John Bonham Led Zeppelin drums there, yeah, you probably haven't been listening to enough music. So, yeah. But yeah, check this out. There's the YouTube link has time codes for all the various tracks, so you can skip around. And he also has this... channel DOS Nostalgia also has the MP3s linked, so you can download it if you want, which I did because it's great.
Mm-hmm. It's good stuff. So go ahead and take a look at that, and we'll come up with another one for next week, I guess.
Yeah, or in a couple of
shouldn't
weeks.
Be difficult.
We don't have to do it every week, just one of those things.
So moving on from that, this week marks the 20th anniversary of the release of the Michael Jordan / Bugs Bunny vehicle, Space Jam.
Yeah.
Why are we talking about this?
Because for some weird reason, people still remember this thing fondly.
It got another re-release in theaters a little while ago. I can't understand why. Michael Jordan can't act.
As if it was something... It was not a triumph of cinema.
No.
I mean, I'll admit the mix of live action and animation was kind of cool.
Sometimes.
But, yeah.
Other times it was very, very dated.
Yeah.
Was it even unprecedented? Like,
no, it wasn't. Well, it had been done before.
I mean, yeah, it had been. I mean, freaking Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yeah.
And that one had both Looney Tunes and Disney in the same movie. Seriously, how can you top that?
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, it is seriously like some dude's producers just got together, smoked just a mountain of weed and were like, dude, I got the best idea. Let's take the biggest athlete in the world and then mix him with Bugs Bunny. And they're fighting aliens.
They're playing basketball.
Like that weird Sylvester Stallone movie where a child's custody was decided by an arm wrestling match.
Over the top.
Yeah.
I did like they made fun of his baseball stint.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, there whatever, screw that part.
The beginning of the movie, though, there's that part where, is what's supposed to be the child playing as young Michael Jordan is, talking with his dad. And
yeah.
Which is unsettling when you remember what actually ended up happening to Michael Jordan's dad.
Yeah.
So the movie basically it's about Michael Jordan. You know, he's after he had retired from the NBA, and now he was playing his dream of playing minor league baseball. Well, he wanted to play baseball professionally. He ended up in a minor league purely on his name, reputation. And they even make that funny thing where even though he screws up terribly, he still gets applause.
Yeah. Definition of Tebowing.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. And then we get whipped all the way down to Looney Tune world.
Yeah.
And apparently there's a bunch of aliens somewhere who are having a failing theme park. They need a new attraction. So they come across Looney Tunes. It's like, hey, let's take them, enslave them, and have them serve us until the end of time.
Yeah. Seemed like a good idea at the time, I suppose. This was the 90s.
And so they challenge Looney Tunes to basketball. But before they do that, the aliens go up to the surface world, to Earth, and they steal the talents of a bunch of other famous NBA players.
Yeah.
So, you know, Charles Barkley,
Sean Bradley, Patrick Sean Ewing,
Patrick Ewing,
Larry Johnson, Bugsy Bogues.
Yeah. And it's really hilarious trying to see these obviously professional, well-known basketball players try to pretend that they suck.
Yeah.
And also act.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Well, they only had, like, you know, 10-second parts, so shouldn't have been that hard, and they still didn't manage it.
Yeah.
It's them losing their powers and then getting them back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And then Bill Murray shows up.
Yeah,
and
Larry
why does
Bird,
he show
Bill
up?
Murray.
Yeah. And why does he show up? Well, because he tells Donald Duck he's friends with the producer. As he put Daffy, I meant, not Donald.
Yeah.
Daffy. God, I can't believe I made that mistake. So let's see what else. Oh yeah, there was the new Looney Tune they introduced that suddenly gave all young boys like me across the world a very unusual erection for reasons we weren't quite sure of. I'm of course talking about Lola.
Yeah.
And she's pretty much the only thing from that movie that managed to survive into Looney Tunes canon.
Yeah.
When she, made her grand reappearance on, I think it's the Looney Tunes show.
Yeah, the new one.
Cartoon Network.
Mm.
Which is not bad.
Okay. Sometimes it tries too hard.
Yeah. Mm. Of course, they basically lobotomized her.
Yeah.
To put her in that show, because before then she was the seductive, extremely athletic, probably the best player on the team next to Michael himself.
Yeah.
They spent way too many shots on that cartoon bunny's ass. Didn't you just love how whenever she did a slam dunk, she would just literally just stick her ass up in the air as she's...
Yeah, they tried to treat her like Jessica Rabbit.
Yeah.
Didn't
you know what the worst part of it all is? Mm-hmm. You know what the worst part of all of it is?
What's that?
I would still totally do her.
Okay.
But see, here's the thing, though. They took that, and then you see her in the Looney Tunes show, and see a major difference.
Yeah, it's kind of redone.
They basically turned her into a comedically sociopathic airhead. But let's not forget that Space Jam basically gave us the song of the year.
Also called Space Jam. But
yeah.
I would like to think that Space Jam had something to do with Sunsoft releasing Looney Tunes B-Ball, which was one of the best basketball games on the SNES. Just saying.
Oh, yeah. I loved that one. But actually, I was talking about the other song.
Mm.
R. Kelly's I Believe I Can Fly.
Oh, dear.
Which was made specifically for that soundtrack.
I didn't know if it was, but it's R. Kelly, so the last...
Keep in mind, this was before...
This was before he pissed on a 13-year-old.
Yeah. So he was still a very respected...
musician.
Yeah.
I think the term is you're looking for.
Not a South Park joke.
Yeah. I was just standing here.
South Park and Weird Al joke.
Yeah.
And Dave Chappelle.
Yeah.
And just about every other comedian in existence. Scary Movie. Just about everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, that song actually won a Grammy.
Yeah, that song basically was the song of the year. Because, I mean, I was in fifth grade when that song came out. And it was freaking everywhere.
Yep.
I mean, it was that year what Celine Dion's My Heart Will Go On was in 1998.
Yeah, I think I bought that soundtrack.
Or was it 1997? I can't remember.
I had that soundtrack.
Yeah. That movie is eating up with 90s tude.
Yeah.
It is probably one of the most dated things you will ever see.
Yeah.
Because, you know, yeah, the live-action animated thing works a lot of the times, but then you'll also see just some really, really dated, like, Lawnmower Man-era CGI.
Yeah. If you're watching the Blu-ray version, that stands out like a sore thumb, because holy crap.
Yeah.
It's how much money do you think it grossed?
Quite a bit, I would imagine.
Too much. Yeah, it was a pretty big success.
$230 million.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense.
It's the...
On a budget of what? 80.
Yeah,
80.
I think it did pretty well.
It's the highest grossing basketball film of all time. Third highest sports film, behind Rocky IV, and The Blind Side.
Yeah,
and people need more slapshot in their lives.
Yeah, and Rocky IV was stupid beyond belief.
Yeah. So, do we recommend that anybody actually watches this movie at this point?
I'll be honest, it is one of those movies you should see just at once. At least,
and especially if you want to see how big Michael Jordan was.
Yeah. If you just want sort of a time capsule of the mid 90s, that's probably one of the best you're going to get.
Yeah,
valid.
Just don't expect like stellar cinema here.
No,
this is at least a lot better than the other live action movie they did. The one that Brendan Fraser. Back in Action.
Oh,
Looney Tunes Back in Action?
Yeah.
Which, weirdly enough, is actually better than Space Jam.
I think we can not talk about Space Jam anymore.
Yeah. All right, moving on.
I'm just going to keep saying it, though. Don't spend those hours watching Space Jam. Watch Slapshot.
Yeah.
Agreed. Just watch...
Yeah. All right.
I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. All right. So our sort of penultimate story of the night is going to be talking a bit about Vice President-elect Mike Pence. Who is...
No, we're not done talking about emails.
Nope. But this time the shoe's on the other foot. And what's funny is I have run into Republicans online pretty much starting to use the exact same arguments that the Democrats were using. So if I remember this correctly, basically what he's trying to do is he's trying to change... Well, obviously, he can't change a law by himself. That requires a vote in Congress. But he's trying to get it so that I think it's a white paper that he's trying to make sure to remain hidden. And the weird thing is that he seems to be doing this kind of publicly. All right, so let me just... Okay, this is Indy Star. Let me
just
see.
It's called falling all over yourself. Just
basically, he wants his communications limited from public access. Experts say this sets a dangerous precedent. The administration is fighting to conceal the contents of an email sent to Governor Mike Pence by a political ally. That email is being sought by a prominent Democratic labor lawyer who says he wants to expose waste in the Republican administration.
Wants to expose waste in the Republican administration. Yeah. Wouldn't the entire Republican administration be waste at this point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just...
And now the race is on. It's thinking like, so what's in that email? What is so incriminating that he is, that Mike Pence is rather publicly trying to suppress it?
And before Grindr account verification.
So Mike Pence is even worse than Donald Trump because Mike Pence has all the glibness of Donald Trump, but he's also a Jesus freak.
Yeah.
Which makes him especially scary. And is probably the one and only justification to make sure that Donald Trump stays president for the next 4 years.
Yeah, because yeah, he would be so much worse.
That being said, if something were to make him make Pence ineligible for the seat of the vice president, all bets are off.
Yeah. And that, in that case, if that happens, then I say, fuck that guy, go for it. Yeah. But, yeah, and like I said, I've already seen some Republicans using a lot of the same arguments that the Hillary people were saying at first. But the thing is that in this point, you know, at that point, you know, they basically went through Hillary's emails with a fine-tooth comb. And well, they found stuff, but nothing of real substance.
Yeah.
Just enough to cast doubt on her. But Mike Pence is really making it clear that there's something on this white paper he doesn't want people to see.
Yeah. Which, of course, is going to make people dig even more for it. So,
yeah.
Good luck with that.
You know, Hillary, as far as the email stuff was concerned, she didn't really, it wasn't really on her radar until people started making it.
Yeah.
Pence is doing this front before he even takes office.
Yeah.
So, I really do have to ask, you know, just sort of quick thoughts, what do you think could actually be on that white paper?
I've already said what I think could be on it.
Kind of doubt that, but...
Like, is he playing? Is he paying blackmail money or something? Or
something?
He said it was a labor lawyer, which would keep in mind Indiana. What before North Carolina had all their stuff with the bathroom laws.
Yeah.
Indiana was the first state to go through that crap.
Yeah.
So maybe it has something to do with that.
Dick pics. Trans dick pics.
I would not be, you know.
I wouldn't be surprised.
He's too clean cut that he has such a clean cut image. I would not be surprised if that ended up being the truth.
Usually, when people crusade against something so hard, they are into
Republican politicians. You find out later on could cruise five dudes in a public restroom in a minute.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it?
If you remember Leland Yee, who crusaded against video games and guns.
And then we found out he was involved arms trafficking with Shrimp Boy Chow, who was one of the big criminal overlords in Chinatown. Wow.
Preach what you practice.
Yeah.
So I have a feeling before January 19th or January 20th rolls around, we're probably going to see something about this.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, it only takes one very dedicated hacker.
Yeah. There are no shortage of them, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. WikiLeaks.
Yep.
I have a feeling that's where it's going to end up.
Yeah.
I want to say somebody was saying before the election that Trump's email security was running on Windows 2003.
Well, yeah, that's because Trump is a technophobe. Amongst being an Islamophobe and a ganophobe and a homophobe and just about everything else. But, yeah, it's people don't know this. Donald Trump does not actually type the stuff on his Twitter account. He says the stuff on his Twitter account, but he has somebody else take it down. Because he hates computers, apparently.
Hey, you heard him talk about his son. How good he is with this computer.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I guess to wrap up this week's episode, it's time to talk a little bit about Black Friday. Specifically, some of the stuff that's going to be coming up this year. We're going to have a little preview of it.
And I'm no longer working retail on Black Fridays.
Hooray! None of us have to go out of the house that day.
Nope.
Especially at Walmart house, Black Friday.
I will be isolated in the safety of an office building, you know, sequestered in front of a computer, not having to deal with any of that shit.
Yeah.
All right. All right. So let's take a look at what we've got here. It's a spreadsheet basically showing us sort of the various
Cheap Ass Gamer has great spreadsheets set up here.
Yeah.
Tries to show you all of the various prices that the different retailers have. Amazon's the only one that's not on here very much because they tend to wait closer to last minute and just price match everybody else's deals.
Yeah. So let me ask you, what is sort of the first thing that pops out to you?
$100 3DS XL.
Yeah, that's not bad.
And if you need controllers, $40 controllers is pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, especially for an Xbox.
Yeah.
And Sony, too, for that matter, it looks like.
Yeah.
I like that Best Buy deal for the PlayStation 4 Pro and a Toshiba TV.
Yeah, 4K TV to play it on.
Yeah, $750.
Yeah, that ain't bad.
Yeah, that's like a $900-something value.
Yeah.
And then,
I'm sure that's going to be easy to get.
$250 for, an Xbox One S, Battlefield 1 bundle. That ain't bad.
Nope. Oh, I've played Battlefield 1. It's definitely worth it.
Yeah.
So, let's see. Let's see, the games.
The big thing about the games is a lot of the most recent stuff is dropping big time. Battlefield 1's $30 at Best Buy. Maybe a little less at Walmart.
It's already half off. Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just got Titanfall 2 from Best Buy for $26 with a Gamers Club unlocked.
Yeah.
Only problem is it's not going to get here until about the 28th.
You can get Assassin's Creed Unity for $8.
I'll pass.
Yep. Yeah.
Just saying.
Let's see. We've got a Nintendo's doing their, of course, their annual $9,500 everything must go fire sale.
Yeah.
That's sort of become a routine for them this about now. Super Mario Limited Edition, Black and White, both of them are $100. Target, maybe as low as $95. And they've also got a lime green lime green Nintendo new DS XL with Super Mario World for $200 at Amazon.
Yeah. Interesting that we don't see any Wii U's in there.
Mm-hmm. Gee, I wonder why. Is it because they can't wait to drop it like a bad habit?
Well, you'd think this would be when you'd
That would be the time to offload them.
Yeah.
But... Let's see.
No, nobody's coming in to get a Wii U.
No.
No. And of course, we got PC stuff, Alienware, their Steam machine.
Alienware Alpha. Pretty solid little machine, so.
Yeah. They're selling the i7 1 terabyte version for $375 and the i3 500 gigabyte version for $225 over at GameStop.
Damn. Get on that shit. That's for that price, that's a very good little machine.
Mm-hmm. And here's the funny thing. I've been to Sam's Club every so often, and the thing is, if you want to get video games at Sam's Club, don't really bother, because they're usually only like maybe $2 or $3 cheaper at most. Like, for example, here, the Sony PS4 Slim, the Uncharted version, at Best Buy, they're selling it for $250. Yeah, at Sam's, they're selling it for $249. BJ's is selling it for $248.
That's not that big of a difference, to be honest.
Nope.
I haven't picked up Doom yet. I'm looking on the PC, and Best Buy's going to have it for $20.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, $15 at Walmart.
I don't think my computer would be pleased if I tried running Doom.
No, it would just like. Yeah, it would be angry at you.
It would just display a giant middle finger on the screen and then shut off.
Yeah. So, let me ask you, I know Patrick has. Have you guys, other guys, worked retail during Black Friday before?
I have not, thankfully.
No, I've walked into retail.
Well, I have.
Apparently it sucks a whole lot of balls.
Oh, yes, it does. So, no, like,
I just KB Toys. That was a fun gig.
Yeah. Imagine working.
To just stand in front of the line and look angry.
Imagine working part-time at GameStop, seasonal, and working a 12-hour shift.
Yes.
6 a.m. to 6 p.m.
People are desperate to get something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, imagine that you were trying to get some more supportive shoes for your arches.
Yeah.
But you did not discover until too late that the shoes you were wearing were a little too small.
Oh. Owie.
Fuck.
And you had your big the toenail on your big toe sort of pushing up against your next toe. They got a nice little cut there at the end of the night.
Yep.
Yeah.
Literally by the end, like the last 10 minutes of that shift, I was, you know, trying to sell a dude on a Wii U. Because this was the Christmas when the Wii U and the Nintendo stuff really was the best stuff coming out.
Yeah.
At that point. I straight up just sat down on the floor.
I was like,
here, come down, sit down with me. Because you know how, like, GameStop, how they have their, holiday sales pamphlets?
Yeah.
And usually they'll have, like, a thing up in the front where they'll have all the pages for it, like put up on a sign.
Yeah.
Well, the Wii U stuff was at the bottom, and I basically just used that as justification. Because my back was basically just, you know, just my lower back was just about ready to give out. Yeah. Oh, and you know what makes it even worse? Yeah. Oh, God. I need to describe this. The GameStop that I was doing my seasonal work at was at this place called the Shops at River Crossing, which is this big outdoor mall about halfway the other side of town. And so, first and foremost, I already had a little bit of trouble finding parking when I got there that morning. All right? But it wasn't too bad because it was just 6 in the morning. You know, Black Friday is notorious for having people showing up really early, but it wasn't that bad. Well, then, what noon rolls around and it's lunchtime. So I go to McDonald's, go out, get a quick lunch. Guess whose parking space was gone when he got back? In fact, all of the parking spaces were gone when he got back. I basically circled the complex for about 15 minutes trying to find another parking.
And that's why I don't leave.
Yeah. And finally, what ended up happening is I found a parking space over near Belk's, which was, and JCPenney, which was on the other side of the complex from where GameStop was. And so at the end of the night, around 6 o'clock in December, I mean, not December, in early November, where it's cold as a witch's tit, having to walk back all the way across the complex, sore feet, sore back, sore knees, back to my car.
That sounds like a lovely job.
So, job. Pat, have you got a story that can top that?
I don't know if it can top it or not, but you know how Walmart is open on Thanksgiving Day now to get their sales started early, right?
Yep.
Well, from you might wonder what it's taking to actually convince associates to come in and work that night. The at least in my experience, the arrangement was basically if you agree to come in and work. Work your shift on Thanksgiving night. You can turn around and work only a regular shift on Black Friday, as opposed to these ungodly 12-hour, you know, bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously a lot of people are taking them up on it because it's not a bad deal if you, you know, for people who are in situations like mine and, you know, don't really have that much else to do on Thanksgiving night. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you cannot schedule somebody to come in after eating Thanksgiving dinner and expect them to be sober.
Yeah.
So if you've had any interesting experiences at Walmart, on Thanksgiving night, there's a good chance that had something to do with it. And I say this from experience.
Yeah. When I worked at Walmart, I had to do the Thanksgiving, the Black Thursday stuff too.
Yeah.
Now granted, I didn't have to go there till I think it was like 8 o'clock, and then I left around 11.
But would you have passed a breathalyzer test?
Oh, I would have. They don't serve alcohol at our Thanksgiving.
Oh, okay. So you were a step ahead of me, but...
I was still in kind of a food coma, though, so...
I was 11 sheets to the wind, and I did not miss a beat on the register. I'm proud of that.
Yeah. Funny thing is, I got off just as they were fixing to do the door buster.
Yeah.
So, before... The thing is,
evacuate.
So here's the thing, though. I basically spent the first 3.5 hours of my shift completely by myself. Because I worked at the deli. Before you start to feel bad, good. I didn't really have to do much. Basically, I just had to make sure that, you know, some chicken wings and stuff were regularly served and available. Otherwise, I didn't really have much. And maybe at the whole time I was there, maybe 3 people came up. So mostly it was just me trying to keep the station manned more than anything else. But by the time my shift was over, I had to piss like a racehorse. So
that does happen.
After I clocked out and all that stuff, I went over to the bathroom. And so I went in there, did my business, came out, and then just as I stepped out of the men's room, 11 o'clock rolls around, and the doors burst open.
And here come the great unwashed.
You know that, yeah, you've seen The Lion King, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say Lord of the Flies.
Well, yeah, that's good, too. But basically, it's just imagine me, tired, exhausted, freshly pissed, basically flattening myself as much as I possibly could up against the wall, trying to not get stampeded.
Yeah, it sounds like the Wii line at E3.
Yeah.
Mm. Which I was part of.
Yeah.
I wasn't in the front or anything. I was back saying, fuck running. Which meant I waited several hours.
Yeah.
Yep. So, all right then. I think we have a show.
Yeah.
All right. So, I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you want, if you wish to email us, ask us questions or whatever, you can catch us at Let's Weekenders, letsweekenders@gmail.com. We'll have a link provided for you in the show notes if you want to send us something. And as always, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. And for Patrick Mifflin, Chris Logi, and Filippo D'Onofrio, I'd like to say have a happy Thanksgiving. Please don't drink and drive. And
do shop and drive. Shop on the internet and drink.
And just avoid going out on Friday the best you possibly can.
Yeah.
It's not worth it. Layaway is a thing. Good night, everybody.